SQL Down Under is a podcast for professionals working in the SQL Server community. SQL Server is a trademark of Microsoft Corporation. Opinions expressed during the podcast are individual opinions and may not reflect the opinions of SQL Down Under or of Microsoft Corporation. Introducing Show 90 with guest Joe Sack. Welcome. Our guest today is Joe Sack. Joe's a principal product manager at Microsoft with Azure SQL, dealing with AI and databases. So welcome, Joe.
Thank you, Greg. Great to be here. Great to see you again.
Indeed. Good to see you back on the show. And after your, what do we call it, a sojourn off to off to Mongo land. And I should ask you briefly about that. What did you learn about Mongo that you didn't know before you went there, I suppose,
from a database point of view, it was very, very fun. They have a huge number of talented people there. So it was very tempting for me. You and I have known each other for a long time. I've been working with SQL Server since 1997 now. Mm-hmm. And so the chance to break out of my shell and get into document databases was very tempting. And so at the time at Mongo, I was the director of product. I had a team the first year of query product manager. So the engine, just think the MongoDB query engine. And then the second year, we added another team with Atlas Search, which was also quite interesting because in the age of vector and all the buzz in that, that was a cool experience as well. But I'd say the number one thing I took from it is I loved getting more of the developer perspective. Mm-hmm. I've spent many, many years with probably 25% database developer and then 75% database administrator persona.
Yeah.
And I flipped that. If anything, it was like 90% developer. And again, it was just fun to go to a company that size. There was so much energy there. Mm-hmm. I have no regrets. I'm just back with the mothership, though.
Back to the mothership. And indeed. And so earlier we had you talking about query processing and intelligent query processing and things like that. So Copilot is the word of the year. So
yes.
So tell us what you're doing.
Yeah, you bet. So this is the start, first of all. You know, you've been seeing Copilot spring up everywhere.
Yeah.
So these are two experiences that we're leading with. So feel free to ask, well, what about here and what about there? But the two that we're starting with are both in Azure, both applicable to Azure SQL Database, and both that you'd experience in the portal. The first is Azure Copilot, or the official term is Microsoft Copilot in Azure. That's something that previewed November of last year. It's still in gated preview. And just think of the side panel. I click the Copilot button. I can start asking questions about my Azure resources. What we've done for our Copilot efforts is we've added, as of this moment, 44 is what I counted, 44 different Azure SQL database skills to that Copilot. Mm-hmm. And think about database skills like, why is my database slow? Do I have any missing indexes? What's my database size? So those kinds of questions, or troubleshoot this error number. So that's the first experience.
It's a fairly constrained list of things you can ask it about then. So, I mean, can't say, tell me a database joke.
I'm glad you're bringing this up because, you know, even some of my testing, I'm like, you know, why is life strange sometimes? And it will block that and it won't answer that. Mm-hmm. So, yes, we've constrained it. And part of that is related to our security and responsible AI efforts. There's this whole concept of fit for purpose. So if we have you in the database blade and you're asking a question related to your database, we should answer database type questions. Mm-hmm. And also it remove some of the attack vectors, right? Because there's all kinds of creative ways that harm might be introduced into the system. So, but yes, it is constrained to 44, although I'm pretty proud that our team was able to do the 44 that we have. It's a pretty wide array, and we prioritize based on discussions with support, with our SREs, and of course, a lot of internal customer feedback of, okay, where should we start? And I can easily do another list of 100 skills, by the way.
I was going to say, so the thing that's sort of interesting there is that it's almost a little bit different to the generative and large language model, because if you look at most of those, the thing that amazes people is that they ask it questions out of just whatever they want to know sort of thing, as opposed to here's a list of things that you're allowed to ask about. You know, it's sort of like yesterday I was having to deal with a banking system, you know, and they have a bot at the front end, and it clearly has, you know, here's a list of things you can ask about, you know, and as soon as you want to step outside that, it just fast becomes useless. And I'm sort of wondering, how do you avoid that sort of thing? Or like, what does it do? I'm presuming that it's making use of your data, your databases, things like that. So that enriches it compared to just here are blog posts that tell you those 44 things.
Exactly right. So here's kind of a little bit, imagine a chart in front of you. So I'll do it verbally. But when I send a prompt to Copilot, right now what we're doing is there's an overall orchestrator, and it's Azure-wide. So there's lots of different Azure services that are enabled for this. I think they call them enhanced skills. That prompt goes to an LLM call, which goes, okay, what is the intent of this question? Mm-hmm. And based on that intent, then that orchestration routes it to the right skill. Now, assuming you are in the context of a database blade, that's additional context that we are aware of. So we can go, you know, this is likely an Azure SQL database question, and it's likely related to database XYZ. And then from that point, we have a set of different skills, and there's another level of intention, like going, okay, what is this customer trying to do? So in the example of my database is slow, because most often the times that could be many different skills. So you could say my database is slow, and behind the scenes, to your point, there's enrichment of we're checking for high CPU, we're checking for block processes. We do a few initial checks for anything that's an obvious indicator of where to orient the next set of skills to be invoked. Now we're doing that behind the scenes. If we, in the example of high CPU, we see, we notice that you've been running at high CPU, then we'll run another skill that says, okay, we're running against sys.dmexec requests. We see this one is running right now. We see this query hash. We also see that it was executed 40,000 times if we look at query store. And then you have opportunities to keep continuing that conversation. We might say, okay, help me tune that particular query. And it'll go, well, actually, we see a missing index recommendation associated with that query. Mm-hmm. So there are...
See, that's actually a really interesting question as an example. Because what has always concerned me there is that there's two ways that discussion can go, right? So if I see a query, like I'll give you an example. I saw one that I often mention, but it was a query on a system where 12,000 times a minute they were loading a list of countries, right? Now, the automated stuff looks at that and says, that's a really important query. You know, and, we should help you in every possible way to make that query run as fast. But there's never a discussion that says, what on earth are you doing? Why are you querying this 12,000 times a minute? Is there some problem, you know? You are returning the same data every time, you know, and that's the actual problem. And yet that's the one that's not dealt with. And I was just thinking something like a Copilot is the beginning of somewhere where you could start to actually have that discussion.
I think you're right. And it's interesting. We have these internal ways to raise cases, these incidents. And even during this private preview of Copilot, I'll raise different incidents based on feedback coming in. And these incidents might be, hey, they didn't get a response that they expected, or maybe it ran too long. And we have this concept of mitigation first and then root cause analysis. So in a way, the mitigation could be, hey, we noticed this is the query driving CPU. But to your point, the next layer could be, by the way, you know you can cache results, especially if they don't change. So yeah, absolutely. And even, by the way, another example where I've been surprised and happy about it in the behavior is, you'll ask a question like, what is my database size? Well, for us, we've been doing this for years. That's easy for us to find out on our own. But if you think about somebody who's maybe an accidental DBA, they go ahead and ask this question because maybe they don't even see to their left that information's in the chart, or they don't have SQL Server Management Studio open. So
they may just prefer to ask it that way. It's one of the things that I've just been sitting here as you're talking, thinking, I do think I'd rather just a natural language interface many of the times to just ask a question, because I can't be bothered looking through the screens to find where the where the value is.
Good point. And yeah, so if that's your, if natural language and having that fluid conversation is the preference. So in this particular example, I was prepping for SQL Bits and I asked the question and it said, your data file size is X, your log file is this. By the way, your top consuming tables are the following. And one of those tables is actually the biggest. The rest are quite small. And did you know also that if you did a lot of data modification operations, we don't automatically reclaim that space. You would need to actually perform that operation yourself. And here's a few links. That was an example where I was like,
because again, I was just sitting there before thinking, if I said, what is my database size? I'm thinking, if you ask me that as a human, I'm not exactly sure I'd know how to answer that, because it's not just like a number, you know, that makes sense. I mean, you could be meaning all sorts of things when you ask that question.
Right. And I think that to me is where I've been really excited, because it gives a little bit of that scene around the corner, or it gives you what you didn't ask, the unstated question that's still important to the discussion. In terms of, I want to go back to your earlier point. If I think about where this is going, I think the first step is we're going to have to build out a mosaic of different skills.
Yeah.
And yes, there will be jagged moments where it's like, well, we don't answer that. And that's going to be frustrating. And we need to try to close those gaps as much as possible when it's reasonable to the domain area of where we're trying to answer the questions. And then the next layer up is that intelligence piece. And there's a part of me, by the way, that is thinking, okay, when GPT-5 comes out, what is the behavior going to be? Because being a PM in this space, it's such an unusual experience. Like the last 6 months, completely different than being a query processing PM, because you're in the land of probabilistic thinking. You're prepping a recording, and it just 5 minutes ago, it gave you one response. And then it's slightly subtle different. It might be tabbing, dashing, adding a little bit of extra exposition. And then you would never get that in the query processing space. A nested loop is a nested loop when you have a low number of rows, as an example.
Actually, there's a thing, even just with query plans, like, can I ask it, what is a nested loop?
So right now we have a documentation skill, which is pretty expansive. So if you did ask questions that are related to Azure SQL Database, of which I should test out whether it knows about join algorithms, I hope so. It's actually something I'll do afterwards. We have a documentation skill that also acts as a little bit of a catch-all. So even if we won't go and run the query to check the thing for you, ideally we're also at least giving you some context about the concept and framing that for you.
Yeah, because one of the concerns I have is that where it's a catch-all, you can often end up in a, like here's a thing that describes all the different join types, for example, but maybe I just want to know what nested loop means, you know, or and so on, and pushing me into something that's much more comprehensive might actually be a bit counterproductive. Yeah.
Yeah. And by the way, you're getting to three attributes that we've been looking at carefully across these skills. One of them is quality. So is it even correct? The second is depth, which is what you're getting at, because I don't want you to throw, like you go to the books online for select and you read through that, you're going to be there a while if you expand it all out.
Yeah.
And so we have to watch out for too much information. And then speed is the third attribute. And all three of them we have to work on. And sometimes you sacrifice speed. Like if I have a troubleshooting issue that would have taken me 5 hours, it's probably okay that it takes 2 to 3 minutes to give you an answer.
Yeah.
If I'm asking about database compatibility level, sometimes during a private preview, we notice that might run a little bit long and the value might not be good for the speed trade-off. So we're looking at those three attributes. Depth, by the way, is subjective. And so we've had people like too much, too little, just right. And so we're calibrating that. And ultimately, ideally, we can see the numbers go up in terms of satisfaction, but we won't get 100%. That's guaranteed.
Yeah, it's sort of striking me. Actually, just yesterday, I was having a discussion with the people that run the Microsoft Q&A, and it's just interestingly relevant in some of what you're saying. But one of the problems they have is that they currently have like these gig worker type people who, because the whole thing is sort of gamified in terms of who gets the most answers ticked off and things like that, but they very quickly can end up diving into a conversation and just pasting like an entire section out of a manual or something like that. And then they're sort of like, well, yeah, that covers it. And you think that might be complete. It might have all the information in there somewhere, but it's not actually helpful to the person who's trying to solve the problem, because they could have looked up the documentation themselves. You know?
Yeah. I should mention I've been talking all about the Copilot integration on Azure front. There's a natural language to SQL element as well too. Mm-hmm. So we added natural language to SQL in the portal in the Azure SQL Query Editor.
Yeah.
And it's a starter experience. You have a place to put in your prompt, show me sales from last year, and you can select the tables or views that should be considered. Click generate, it'll create the T-SQL. You can accept or decline it and then decide to run it.
Yeah, actually, that's interesting as well, in that if I look today at the SQL that's generated by ChatGPT-4 or things like that, it's okay. It's not great. And I'm just sort of wondering like how capable this is. And for example, if you had coding standards in your organization, is there any way for it to learn that? And so, I mean, if I look at one of the things I often think with consultants, there's a maturity level for consultants where when you arrive at a place, or start working in something, you don't want to just change everything straight away. And if you have to build new things that go into what's there, you build it with the style that is already there. Yeah. and it takes people a while to get their head around that, but it's just interesting. I looked at a client site the other day where they'd had a really big turnover of staff. And when I look at the code that was generated by a new person that was in there, you know, they'd just not follow. It just totally looked unlike any of the rest of the code. Yeah. And so you go, I don't actually want that. What would be interesting is for it to potentially, even if there's a lot of procs and things and whatever, to be able to derive the style and then follow that. But I don't know how complex that is.
This is timely, by the way, and I'll be forwarding this podcast to our research department, because we were just talking about this week. A few things. Today's technology, so the private preview as it stands, we will use the schema that you have permission to. So your tables, and that's the names and the column names, and then the primary key and foreign key relationships. That is admittedly a subset of the expressiveness that you would need to generate the T-SQL. So we know that some people have tidy schemas, but I did consulting for several years. I'm in the real world. We know even when it's tidy, it might not be something that a human understands, you know, what column A, B, C, D is. So one of the big things on the roadmap, first of all, beyond those attributes, is the ability to give additional information. Like when I say sales, pick the most recent table based on the underscore, if somebody's using spinning off a new table by year. Or if I say calculate sales, these are the columns that are of interest.
Even that is a major challenge, right? It's one of the reasons why I still feel that I'm not too worried about these the human roles going away in a hurry. You know, like I cannot tell you the number of times I've heard a customer say the word sales, but they meant profit, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
and so on and so on. And so, yeah, you know, there's a limit to which the, but it's not until they actually start to see the data, they go, oh, no, I meant the profit. Yeah.
Yeah. And, it's a conversation. So, then it's like a conversation starter of, this is not what I want. But I'm with you. I think there's a few different things that we definitely need to have in the future. And also, there are different product offerings. Like, so people say, hey, I could do this in ChatGPT-4, mm-hmm. or I could do this in Gemini, or I could do this elsewhere. The answer is yes. And if that's working for you, then you do that.
Yeah.
The idea here is just that wherever we think that there could be helpful, a helpful place for these co-pilots, we're going to start weaving them in. And yeah. so in particular, the query editor in the portal, it's very much for lightweight querying. Most people will go, they'll go to ADS, they'll go to definitely go to SSMS. And oftentimes we see there's high traffic in the portal, but it's jump in, check something out, jump out. And so for those scenarios, if we can help just generate those queries, especially if, again, for the accidental developer or the DBA, that's the goal. That context, by the way, there's all kinds of opportunities that may not fit into this particular product offering, but think about Query Store. If you said, I give you permission to look at my standards based on what you see executed in Query Store, or I give you permission based on this Word document that actually has my best practices and my naming conventions. And I mean, all of that makes sense. It also assumes, you know, you're doing a big context window and that there's a way for that to be along with your prompt. But there's a lot of opportunities there. And I think it'll be needed if we really want to move from, let's say, 20% of the market for this being helpful out of the box to something like 60 or 70%.
Yeah, indeed. As I said, it'd be interesting just even to be able to teach it styles or something like that. But the I'm not sure how large the context is, but I mean, that could be significant to do that. But I mean, the alternative to that is to have a well recognized style or choice of styles that you could ask it to follow. Because I suppose what concerns me is if I look at the existing learn content, for example, the SQL styles are completely all over the place. And so you go, will we end up with the same sort of thing coming back out of a copilot if that's what it learned from?
Yeah. So I'm listening to this, by the way, and thinking, okay, I'm talking to William afterwards if we have some opportunities here. Everything that is honestly the exercise I do every day is I get these product management related tasks. I go, okay, if an LLM was in the mix, how could this help solve this problem? Just as an exercise. And sometimes it's like, okay, no, a human still needed here, or you know what, I need to do this from scratch. Oftentimes I find it's like you produce the clay. So if I find the most effective use of these LLMs is if I can produce 95% of it. And I put it on, and then it really shines. So to your earlier point of like humans still needed, absolutely. I think it's if you can bring the materials to it, that's really when it's good. If you ask it to do it from scratch, it's generally unhelpful, or it's pretty far off the mark without the right prompt engineering.
One of the things that while having a shower earlier, I was sitting thinking about, thinking about... How this might work. The other thing that came to mind is that whenever you ask somebody a question, there are different types of people you could ask a question of and who would respond very differently. Mm-hmm. You know, and so some people might, if you ask a question, could be sort of short and abrupt and just answer the question. And at the other end, you have the teacher who'll, you ask the question and they'll sort of spend more time explaining why they answered what they answered and so on. And I'm just sort of wondering, like, where do you fall by default on the sort of attitude, you know, that's across?
You've heard of the temperature setting as well. This is not the exact same thing that you're talking about, but have you heard about the temperature setting where zero is, you know, just stick with the facts. One is wildly creative and random. These are, and even if you do this, I think last time I tested this ChatGPT, you could say, set my temperature to X. So when it comes to Azure Copilot, the tone is very much just the facts, but it's not unfriendly. It's not terse.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of the temperature setting is very low in terms of, we don't want wild flights of fantasy. We want this to be grounded in the reality and the RAG, the retrieval augmented generation, that the details we're pulling based on that skill should be grounded in that, or should be used for the grounding. Interestingly enough, for the natural language to SQL, we allow it a little bit of a higher temperature because we want alternatives behind the scenes when we're choosing different alternatives. There's pre and post processing that actually the research lab, GSL Gray Systems Lab folks had actually generated, where they look at alternatives and then help pick one that is seen to be the best quality response. Mm-hmm. And you need that temperature to be a little bit higher to have that creativity. If everything's just deterministic, every time I put in A, I get B, you lose some of the magic of
generative AI. That's where it starts to disappear, and that's what worries me a little bit there. Yeah, in fact, it always sort of reminds me, the most abrupt thing I've ever come across like that, we were staying in Berlin, and I had to go to Poland, right? And so we had to get to the East Berlin railway station. So in the morning, you know, checking out, we went downstairs, and then I said to the lady at the counter, I said, "Look, I need to get a taxi," and she just said, "Cannot come." And I thought, "What?" and she just repeated, "Cannot come," and I thought, "Huh, okay." And I looked outside, and there's taxis going past, and I'm like, Turns out we were staying in the middle of the Berlin Marathon, and literally a taxi could not come.
that little bit of context was missing.
100% accurate, but completely unhelpful.
I'm hoping that ours is in that middle zone. It's and also think of like the real estate. This is in a sidecar on the portal. So even so many DBAs, we live on result sets. And one of the challenges we've had is, if I'm saying, what are the top 10 slowest queries over the last 7 days? Before, we were saying, okay, here's eight columns that will be of interest to you, and then 42 rows. You stuff that into a side panel, there's no experience that makes that pleasant. And so we've had to make some trade-offs where we say, here's like the first three columns and up to five rows, and then here's a link to the query to show it. So in terms of the data itself, like show me the list, that's pretty straightforward. It's all the other exposition or the description in between that is a balancing act. And that's also why we have this, what's made this so much fun is I have a team of data scientists that I work with and engineers. And so that balancing act, when we talk about calibrating the response, oftentimes I'm talking to the data scientist about that. If we're talking about just pulling in the right context, I might be talking to an engineer.
Hi, this is Greg. Just wanted to thank you for listening to this show and let you know that if you'd like to let me teach you more about SQL Server, we now have both free courses and low-cost courses available online and on demand. The courses include detailed hands-on lab work for you to complete to reinforce your learning, and there are more courses coming in the next few months. You'll find details at training.sqldownunder.com.
Yeah, it's interesting too. Like, I often see tables that, let's say, are very cryptic, right? And if I think, what could a language model help me with? Sometimes it's things like acronyms. You know, if I have a thing that language models are good at often are these sort of things. So if I have a column that's got, you know, DOTIF, and I look at that and think, what on earth is that? It'd be really useful to be able still to, or do I need to dive out to ChatGPT or something to be able to say, what does DOTIF mean? You know, it was delivered on time in full, right?
Of course.
right. So, but one of the things that's sort of interesting is that an advanced language model could almost derive the context of the types of things you're talking about from the type of database that you've built, and then help you with industry acronyms and things that are associated with what you're building.
Absolutely. By the way, I've also found ChatGPT for super helpful with sample data, sample schemas. Does
That's
a beautiful
another
job.
Another one that I was going to ask you about is that if I look at, you know, can I have, I'd love to be able to just say to it, can I have 6 rows of test data for this table?
It does it very, very well. And it's sort of Copilot for that matter. But you just, and sometimes you might need to tune it. So if I say, hey, here's the concept. Like I actually did this with a real estate paradigm. Like I have properties that are for sale by agents. And then I say, okay, for Minnesota, you know, give me a list of properties that are for sale. Some of them have already been sold. Some of them are pending. And then give me a good diversity of agents. And with you know, some maybe have 0, some maybe have 4 listings. Did a beautiful job. And the key thing is conversing with it. So there were some times where I'm like, okay, now I want 1 million rows, and I need you not to do a cursor for this, or I need you to do some techniques to make this a fast operation. And it'll do it. So,
so that's good.
That kind of stuff I would have loved 10 years ago. It would have been
helpful. Example, I had a table recently where I wanted some sample customer data. But what was interesting then is I also asked it for it in Chinese, and and it did an excellent job, ChatGPT-4. And what impressed me is it wasn't just sort of like random names, like the family names were common Chinese family names and so on. You know what I mean? Like it wasn't just test data that I could have got somebody to just whip up who didn't know anything much about it, you know?
It's pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. By the way, a little bit earlier comment on the tone. For internal communications at Microsoft, I've been testing out, I want to create a local model that I call it the Hemingway model of take my email, short paragraphs, short sentences, nothing extra, no frou-frou, basically nothing, you know, keep it just with the facts, polite, but short. But that would not be a style I would want to use with customers and with private preview customers. So just even the idea of having different templates, like you were mentioning earlier, the different personas and contexts, I think that'll be really powerful. I'm trying to roll my own these days, but I know that we need that, like, okay, now I'm the DBA, now I'm the accidental DBA, now I'm the developer, now I'm an application developer, now I'm a CXO.
Yeah.
There are different abstractions that we want to apply in the response for these copilots.
Actually, one of the funniest things I've seen in the last year actually was Greg Nash, one of the local MVPs, was doing a session on using ChatGPT to build Power BI reports and things like that. But I loved it when the first time I saw him tell it he was Australian, and it started going, okay, mate, you know, and so on. And
trying hard just, there.
And so. But I started to realize just, you know, you could tell it you're a Midwestern cowboy or so the personas was really quite interesting how that could apply. It's quite impressive, actually.
Yeah, it is. It's super exciting. And it's very early. That's the other thing. So it's just but the difference is, even I remember, I think it was my second stint, or it might have been my first stint at Microsoft, I was working with the docs team, and I remember thinking, we have all these questions on forums, and we have all these documentation posts and blog posts. And I said, there's got to be a way that we can use, you know, machine learning. I don't know what terminology I used back then, but we have to go, hey, here are where the questions are. And we're clearly not serving them through documentation.
Yeah.
And find the intersection and go, these are the documents that we should prioritize writing over the next year. And just to know that even these ideas are trivial now. To ask that question, to be able to do those operations, that's a half a day hackathon to be able to do that, or a couple of hours. Versus back then, it was like, that's a great idea, but don't know how we're going to do it.
It's one of the things that I started playing around with years ago with Google custom groups, or I can't remember what they were calling them, some name like that. Where you could specify the sites and things and stuff that would be searched in the search returns, you know, responses, rather than just generally, right? Because I kept feeling that I read stuff that was just nonsense online in blog posts and things and stuff, and I read other stuff that was gold. And I kept thinking you needed humans to be able to go through and go, if this person wrote it, it's probably sensible.
Yeah.
You know, or, you know, he's on it or she's on top of things. But and it's worth, and so almost like, can I just index all the ones out of the people I know are actually talking sense? And I'm wondering, like, how you do that, because what also troubles me is just how these engines learn and who they learn from, right? And an example I gave others recently was I did a lot of baseball umpiring over the years, and one of the things I got the other day was a test going, hey, you know, here's 25 questions for an umpire, you know, see how you go. And I thought it'd be interesting to put that in ChatGPT-4, which I did, and I told it, you're a AAA umpire, you know, it's like, yep, no problem. And I gave it the 25 questions. It got 40% right.
Okay.
Which I thought, wow, that's awkward, actually. That's not great. It came across like 100% confident on every one of them. Mm. But sometimes, for example, it had mixed baseball and softball rules, right? And so on, really interesting. But the thing that most fascinated me is it was the hardest questions that it got right.
Mm.
And then one of my fellow MVPs suggested to me, it's probably because the only people who would ever discuss that are ones who actually know what they're talking about.
Yeah, so it was trained on absolute expertise, and then there was a cliff drop-off of knowledge after that.
And so as it became more and more commonplace, the more and more nonsense is out there. And it's exactly the same with the blog posts, with the things, you know, the lower level the thing is, the more likely you are to be sort of, you know, vacuuming up enormous amounts of nonsense. So the question is, how does it learn?
Yeah, so a few different things, because, and actually there's a bunch of good topics in here, because there's, first of all, the risk of harm and getting back inaccurate or offensive materials.
Yeah.
The second thing you mentioned, hallucinations, all of which can still happen in any of these co-pilots. So we're still in the zone where you still have to, this is a co-pilot, you still have to pay attention to what it's producing and really think about it. Which is hard, by the way, because our instinct is, you help me, let's move on. I've got a lot of things to do. So
even the baseball softball crossover, the thing is, I could well imagine that if you're just looking at documents or looking at discussions or looking at whatever, you don't necessarily always have that context that you know which one they happen to be talking about. And then the words are very, very similar. Right. And so it could easily think one was the other. Yeah.
And you're seeing, by the way, you're seeing some of the trend is then referencing everything. So you'll see this in Microsoft Copilot, where you'll see lots of references of where do we get this information from. I think even Perplexity is referencing all over the place, that search engine. And so that is one of the ways. Now, by the way, I remember an early GPT, I think it was 3.5 or early version of it, it completely hallucinated the actual links of the research. Somebody was asking about, so, and they look good, by the way. Like, they were like, wow, there's a paper on parallelism for massive dot, 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 dot. I'm like, perfect. And it did not exist. So, and they're finding this with lawyers. Lawyers are going to court with all these, you know, references themselves. So that groundedness, that's a big thing, that you're going to see more of the references. For our Copilot preview, first of all, the grounding is on our documentation. Now, you being an MVP, I know you're going to go, okay, but I've seen some documentation that, you know, but I would just say this is where we start, because it's our IP.
If
we can't, trust ourselves, you know, who can we trust? It's also the data that gets pulled for the skills. It's not, though, pulling or using anything to fine-tune based on the customer's data. So while we're using retrieval augmented generation, we're pulling that context as part of the prompt. It's not used to fine-tune or do anything out of those boundaries, which also means, by the way, like, we also have customers that say, no, I want it to learn. This isn't that solution then. There's going to be other solutions that you can go from where it's like, nope, we have a nice boundary and we want it to learn based on this data that we're providing. But for these Copilot offerings, it's at scale, no, we're not training. So it's there's the hallucination aspect, which I don't see a lot of on the Azure Copilot side. During testing, I saw it more in the natural language to SQL. So we still see some hallucinating of column names. The other thing is we'll make educated guesses on things. I'll give you an example. Show me all properties that are for sale. Well, we know that there might be a sale state column. And so the natural language model can go, okay, that's likely the column that this person needs. But we don't know what the literal value should be of the status. Mm-hmm. Is it sold? Is it 1, 2, 3? Is it, you know, it could be any number of things. So you might see it hallucinate the value, but in a way you don't want it to know what the value is unless we gave it permission to look at a sampling of the data values. Mm. By the way, again, some customers do want us to do that sampling of it. And again, this wouldn't be that solution.
Yeah.
So there's the hallucination thing. There's the harm detection. There's a tremendous amount of process.
That's a really good point, because to write an appropriate query without knowing anything about the values of the data and just the schema, that's a tough call.
Yeah. It is. And so it's inferred. And then this is actually where, in the case of natural language to SQL, we're using 3.5 Turbo. This is all subject to change, by the way. So as new models come through, for Azure Copilot itself, we're using GPT-4. And by the way, these are Azure OpenAI. These are not leaving the Azure boundary. We're not using OpenAI companies endpoints for this. But for these models, there's some knowledge. So 3.5 is smart enough to go, this is likely the column, especially if you're using things like AdventureWorks.
Yeah.
Well, you know, these are like sample databases that are out in the wild.
Mm-hmm.
I want to get to an earlier point you had also about the quality of content. So you're seeing this with these new models being shared, some open source, some closed, where they're doing distilled down academic work only. So they're saying we're going to generate these models based on a subset of the internet versus everything and curating it down. That's one theme. And then the other is synthetic data. That synthetic data can actually be quite effective for training these models as well. So there's a few different themes there to kind of keep some of that pollution out, which also can help with some of the harm and offensive materials that can pop out depending on how you're approaching it.
It's fascinating stuff.
It is. So, every day there's news too. So this is I get on the treadmill and I'm like, okay, what did I miss in the last 24 hours? And there's always something. There's always something.
Yeah. And so look, we're pretty much getting to time, but it's so what's coming up in the near future for you? Will people see you anywhere or?
Let's see. SQL Bits was the first time going to a conference in a long time, a SQL related conference in particular. Last time before that was MongoDB World.
Mm-hmm.
So I imagine you'll see me at the bigger conferences. I won't be at Build. I know Bob Ward will likely be at Build, so you'll get the real deal there. Big focus right now is getting as much feedback as possible. There's a sign up form for this private preview. It's a short link. You can actually find it at aka.ms/SQL Copilot, all one word. You'll find a link. We have about 250 onboarded customers already. It's about, I think we're 4 weeks into the private preview.
Mm-hmm.
We're taking it in waves, just making sure that, you know, things are good as we add batches of anywhere from 50 to 100 customers.
And these would all be Azure SQL database too.
Exactly. Azure SQL database. The first question we always get, by the way, is, oh, is this in MI? Is this in VM? Is this in SQL Server? and the answer is this is specifically for Azure SQL database.
Yeah.
You know, for the
I'm endlessly telling people if you want to be at the front end of all these things.
Yeah.
That's where you need to be.
It's a good pull. but the thing to note is, yes, we know these experiences are needed all over. Like across the portfolio. So in terms of focus area, it's heads down with the team trying to draw out as much feedback as possible, because at a certain point we'll go to an ungated preview, have a lot more customers testing this. At a certain point, there will be a business model. So there'll be some kind of fee associated with, for example, Microsoft Copilot and Azure before GA. So there'll still be a good runway so we can get as much feedback.
One thing you were saying about queries, though, is the natural language stuff around the queries only applies then in the portal for writing queries there, because I would have guessed that that would be currently a tiny percentage of people writing queries.
We actually, it's very interesting. There are hundreds of thousands of monthly active users in that. Now, in terms of writing queries from scratch, a lot of it is data exploration. So in terms of the persona interviews, a lot of it is jump in, check something out, jump out.
Yeah.
And so, which actually was a good way for us, because one of the things we could have done is said, let's hold off on this until, let's say we have an autocomplete scenario, so something more close to GitHub Copilot's experience, which of course that's on the roadmap as well. But we saw that there would be enough of a, hey, I just want to jump in, help me with a pivot query, help me with joining these 8 different tables. Say, hey, I want this salesperson from this region for this product line. And assuming you have the expressive PK and FK definitions and the table names, it can do a good job.
In fact, it's one of the things that I often get asked is why we don't just have natural joins in the SQL Server product in the first place. I mean, if the PK and foreign key definitions and everything are nice and neat and clean, why does it need us to tell it?
There's a lot of interesting stuff here that we can...
rather than a machine writing it, let's just not even need it in the first place. Yeah,
definitely.
But that's interesting. Yeah, I think the only time I tend to jump into that query, and I do jump in and out of it, but it tends to be things like I need to execute a query that has to be done from within an AAD connected session. Mm. And that's the quickest way for me to grab an AAD connected session.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
That's good.
Are you going to be coming to the States at all? Will I be seeing you at PASS
this
year?
No current plan. Yeah, okay. We the furthest we've ventured out of the country in the last couple of years have been to New Zealand. So although the next event coming up in New Zealand, I don't know that we'll get across to. There's some good options there, but they're in the middle of winter and it is New Zealand, so I'm not so sure of the temperature will suit. Put it that way. If we're going anywhere, I think it might be north rather than south. Yep,
makes sense. Seems like a sane choice.
End of the world. Yeah, it's the other way around for everybody else. But yeah, no, it's awesome. Hey, listen. So thank you so very much for your time today, Joe.
Thank you, Greg. Great catching up with you. I think back to the MCM days and then the QP days. And I like, so every 10 years, we'll get together and talk about things.
Awesome. Thanks.
Thank you.